Hello, everyone. My name's Hendrik. I work at CSC, which is the Finnish National Supercomputing Center. And I'm going to speak to you about the EuroHPC Federation platform, where I currently now function as the technical coordinator for the whole solution. Now, for those who are not very aware of the ecosystem, I'm going to start by explaining what is the EuroHPC JU and what are we actually federating. I'm going to give a brief overview of the challenges the user are facing, which then drive the design of the service. I'm going to talk about the architecture, the components, and highlight the open source aspects of the project and service. So for those who do not know, the EuroHPC JU is a joint initiative between EU, European countries, and some other actors. But essentially, they're an entity which then co-funds really large machines in collaboration with European countries. The most important part is whoever is managing the infrastructure, the supercomputer, that's a hosting entity. I'm going to talk about them a lot, and you're going to see the abbreviation HE multiple times in the presentation. And so, for example, on the right, we have Leonardo in Italy. There, the hosting entity would be Cinica, that has many GPUs, and BSC to the left with Mare Nostrum 5. The users of the system, as with most national supercomputing infrastructure, is academic researchers, research institutes, public authorities, and industry. This is kind of a more novel point on the HPC side, where a lot of universities, that's just for research. About 20% of the compute capacity for the systems is kind of reserved for SME usage. Okay, so the actual systems we are targeting with this federation, which is going to be accessible by the platform. So we have around 12 classic supercomputer, just big Linux boxes, large parallel file system, loads of local users, nightmare for anyone who actually gets a hiccup when you say that, okay, I have 3,000 untrusted users with shell access on my machine, and that's my just the status quo. Then after the classic supercomputers, there are these AI factories, which are essentially just AI optimized supercomputers with then a bunch of added functionality. They do not exist yet. About 7 have been announced at the end of 2024, but probably a lot of GPU, but then more features around data management. Nice talk previously illustrated some of the issues, and then more cloud-like features. Let's see what actually emerges. Then for more experimental scientific usage, which will also federate, are the various procured quantum computers for European researchers to test out different architectures and technologies to see which one is going to come out on top. If you want more information, you can go to the EuroHPC JU's page, where they have a nice info on what's up and running and what's up and coming. Okay, so the current issue, if you are a researcher or industry or something and you want to use EuroHPC JU resources, is that each of these now, currently 12 different HPC sites, have completely different identities, projects, and onboarding methods. So this means that if you're granted compute access for the computer in Italy, okay, you register an account, you send a copy of your passport, you fill in a bunch of stuff, you get in a project, you add people there. Okay, then you need to do some other research. Now you got resources on Lumi, which is in Finland. Again, register, completely different process. It does not know anything about you. So then when people start using multiple of these machines, it's really a hassle to keep redoing this, and then especially managing large projects. For example, some of the largest projects on Lumi, they have 150 people in the project. Then you might have a 50 people more in Italy, and you don't have a central way of managing that. We're seeing an increasing amount of new user groups, which are not familiar with classical HPC, the Linux command line, or then are accustomed to a different level of abstraction for their compute. And of course, there is a great interest then to make sure they can effectively utilize the compute power, not just dump them in the shell and say, have a nice day, because that's not how Europe is going to win, or at least participate in the AI race. Growing heterogeneity of the compute is a headache for everyone who is not in love with the hardware. They just want to do the science, but then we as center keep switching out. Okay, now we bought AMD. Oh, yeah, sorry, it's way worse than the software, but you're going to have to now do 3 months of extra work to continue your analysis. And, I mean, again, to the topic of the previous talk, compute is way easier to move than data. So a lot of the time, one of the challenges when you want to utilize more resources on another system, or you've just allocated resources on a different system, it's not porting your code, it's if you need to move your data there. And this is, for some science areas, this is more of a problem. Climate science, high energy physics or something. If you suddenly want to move a petabyte or something, it's just a snap of the fingers. Okay, so to the actual solution, now that you know what's going on in the ecosystem. The Federation platform so has a key few functionalities. The first one is one federated identity with single sign-on. This in practice would mean that a end user would use their probably home institution, university provided authentication to then identify themselves to all the services provided by all the machines. Then a single point, one-stop shop for resource allocation, management, and monitoring. So if you're a professor and you have multiple projects, multiple allocations, multiple machines, you have a single point of doing that. Direct access utilizing SSH certificates. I will not cover this in details, but essentially, again, making sure there is the same way of accessing all the systems. So you don't need to teach an end user 10 different ways that we manage SSH keys on this particular system. It's more that, okay, I want to compute there. Okay, it's going to be the exact same. Just tell me where you want to go. And then for the kind of less low-level compute-oriented user communities, high-level features like web-based access for Jupyter notebooks, following up what your AI simulation is doing, browsing some stuff, or just simple shell access. A federated software catalog, which is based on Easy, more on that later, but leveling the field that you can expect some sort of basic catering of software in all the different systems. Again, not having to start from scratch every time. And then advanced features for workflows and data transfers. So again, for people not very familiar with the ecosystem, okay, I want to compute that and that, and I'm going to need that data. Please go and execute my code for me. For the timeline, so we started work now in January, a few weeks ago, and the plan is that this will be ready on 9 systems by Q1 2026. So you can look forward to that, and unless I mess up my job. And then, just as information, it's a consortium of 5 partners where CSC where work is coordinating. Other partners are Nordinet, Giant, IT4i, Tartu, and University of Ghent. Okay, now I discuss the features. The high level, really high level picture you can keep in your head is there is a platform which we build, which provides all the fancy features and services which I just described to you. And now the end user then either interactively clickety-clicks in their web browser on that platform, or then fetches API keys to do the more fancy stuff, the more programmatic stuff, or is allowed then to fetch SSH credentials to go via the command line. We're not removing any of the low-level stuff. That's still going to work, just be more streamlined. Now, the secret sauce of the whole solution is, of course, the integration to the actual hosting sites. This talk does not cover that. I hope I can give that talk at some other point. But essentially, there will be a varying amount of glue, making sure that data about users and allocation go in the correct direction so that user then actually has something to touch on the system. Not drawn out, but of course, I mean, data transfer is not going to take a round trip via our platform, which is probably going to be physically located in Northern Europe. That would be very slow. Data transfer and other things which do not need to go via the platform go directly from system to system, or then from the user to the system. Okay, so the architecture, if we're looking now at this, is the central platform. So the thing in the middle in the previous picture. So essentially, it's a very modular and flexible architecture where separate components are tightly glued together with the SSO and single identity, but they're responsible for some particular feature of the system. And this is, I mean, we're heavily leveraging a lot of open source components, which I'm going to show next, and then to be able to accommodate all the future systems. Now we know how 9 systems look, but there's 3 systems coming online, 7 AI factories, which we do not know what the tech stack will look like, and 8 quantum computers where people have now even decided what the interface is. So we're going to need a high degree of being able then to adapt to whatever somebody decides to build to be able to plug it into this. So there's the core platform, which we manage, and then the, again, glue components, the hosting entity components, which are responsible for connecting our various components. One more time. Perfect. Okay, so now I'm going to flash a bunch of components. Some of these are maybe familiar for you, some are not, but I've left the links there. So the AAI is going to leverage Giant My Access ID and then a few other components which are still being built. Allocation is based on Valdor, or then you might have heard the term Puhuri, which is a kind of deployment of the Valdor software. Open on demand is probably the HPC technology which is most broadly used out of these ones. It comes from the States, and that would be responsible for the interactive clickety-clickety. Workflow is based on Lexis and Hippie. Reporting is your basic standard tech stack. There's Grafana, there's Isinga, there's OpenSearch. We have a help desk because, again, this is, we're not just building a software product. We're actually producing a service, which means we will have users which will need help. And then the software catalog, as I briefly mentioned, is going to be based on EasyBuild and Easy via CERN VMFS. So most of this is open source. You can go click these up. You can go download them. Some of them are fairly complex to run. So you can just do an install and expect them to be up and running. But if you're willing to put in the time, most of these things, you can run them yourself. A lot of them are already running separately on various systems. Good. Okay, I'm going to give a extremely brief overview of the main components. Okay, so the AAI, as I said, that utilizes My Access ID. For those not in the know, that is essentially super simplified. It's an AAI proxy with a discovery service and account registry. What that means is that when a user logs in, they can search for their home institution. For example, there's about 3,000 hits for something named University of blah. Then they are presented with that, for example, that university's logging screen. And okay, now they are registered. Now the My Access ID knows that there is some unique ID which identifies with this identity provider. Then there's fancy things for linking if you have multiple identity providers mapping to the same actual natural person and so on. For those who are doing the technical integration, essentially SAML or OpenIDC works out of the box. And this is going to provide a SSH certificate authority for then the access. So users log in, get a short-lived SSH certificate, which is then trusted at the target sites. You can log in. 24 hours later, you have to re-authenticate and get another key to continue working. Perfect. Okay, I'm going to have to speed up. Okay, allocations. This was based on Valdor, and as I said, a unified place where you can view your project, your project memberships, and to what systems the project grant you access and how much compute hours you have left. The actual granting of the project is not directly part of our platform. That's the responsibility of another component being Procure, the your HPC peer review platform, which should be online somewhere around summer, if I recall correctly. Workflows is kind of your entry point for doing easy to use managed workflow for selecting, okay, I have an application, it needs this input, I can now graphically connect these and it'll take care of running it then on a single system or then over multiple systems. It also supports then this kind of data staging aspect that, okay, if your data is on system X, we'll move it somehow to system Y, depending on how much functionality the various hosting entities provide for moving data. Do they have irons for staging? Perfect, this is gonna be really quick. Do you only provide SCP through a login node? It'll work, but you'll have to spend a bit more time in the coffee room waiting for us to transfer the data. And this is able then to target, I mean, Slurm, other batch schedulers, or then Kubernetes, which is most likely going to be more relevant with the AI factories. Okay. Open on demand, interactive. You can get desktops, Jupyter Notebook, a shell. For those who have used Open On Demand, we're not going to use the vanilla Open On Demand. We're going to develop functionality to move it further away from the system. Currently, Open On Demand will essentially sit in your HPC center. We don't want to do that. That's too invasive. So we're going to do several contributions to be able to move it further away from the system, which might also be useful elsewhere. There will be a help desk. And reporting will be able to show you how much resources you are consuming and hopefully how much resources some of your postdocs burnt on something stupid. And then you can go and knock on the door. The software catalog, there are multiple people here in the room who know Easy way better than me. But essentially, we're going to use Easy to provide a pseudo unified stack with at least some of the software and compilers being that the user does not need to care specifically what architecture they're running on. Are they running on AMD or are they running on NVIDIA? It says, okay, I want to use PyTorch, module load PyTorch. Easy fixes that. And okay, 2 minutes left. Okay, so last 2 minutes on the open source aspects. This would not be possible without open source. If you consider the scope of the functionality and the implicit understanding the implemented technologies have of user requirements, starting from scratch and compiling that into something sensible would be an extremely large job. Federation, of course, requires a degree of trust that, hey, our stuff works. With open source, that, okay, somebody else is running it, you can have a look at it, you can go and check it out. It's much easier than, here is my binary blob, please install it so that stuff works. And then also on the promised features, because now I've shown you a bunch of stuff. I'm promising you very many things which can be done. If this was a closed source solution, which wasn't used anywhere and you can look into it, you would probably think that he's trying to, I mean, bullshit us. There's no way. But now you know, kind of, yes, that is an open source component. It works there. I understand why it works. This could also work. End users would probably rather integrate into less things than more things. And then, of course, we need to do heavy modifications to be able to integrate, I mean, glue everything together. If this was closed source, not a chance. And 30 seconds for the last thing. Yes. So hopefully the benefit for the rest of the community would be that we try to upstream what makes sense. Everything does not make sense, but we have fortunately the ability to continuously work with the upstream and propose features instead of doing this in bulk, which is sometimes the case with these kind of projects when there are some IPR-related restrictions. For a lot of projects, the integration is the hard part. So I'm hoping that when we work out the integration with 20 plus systems, we're able to upstream or those changes, or at least document that this is things you can encounter during the integration. And then final last point, of course, is it's a large user base for the projects. You get bug testing feedback. For certain projects, it's also a very good measure of impact. Hey, we built such a good project that they dumped it and opened it to 3,000 European scientists. Okay, thanks. Questions?
The big players in the HPC ecosystem, or can we expect to have small clusters, university clusters, also plugged in into FEP in the future?
Yes. So the question was that if this is intended only for the big players, in the long run, this is meant also to facilitate that if you want to connect smaller national or regional things to this, that will be possible.
Mentioning that you're going to use certificate authorities because everybody says you have to use MFA even for SSH, security people want it. But the thing that keeps on popping up, at least on our side, is there are a lot of people actually SSHing into the cluster with scripts. And these short-lived certificates are an issue. You already have a solution to that, and you're going to try to put that in that work management framework? Or?
So the question was that how the certificate lifetime of the SSH connections affect certain user workloads. So yes, some of the things you will be able to do the workflow stuff, and the hope is that we would get rid of these infinitely lifetime unsecured keys somewhere. Then the Federation platform tries to be very agnostic from site policy, so then it's more up to the hosting entity, how long do you want your certificate to be? So if somebody decides we only want to give our HPC users 48 hours, fine, we'll dump out 48 hours. Or then if, we're fine with 3 months, good. Personally, I would like to see a kind of dynamic shift where the longer your SSH certificate lifetime is, the more restrictions I add to it. So, okay, you can get 6 months, but I'm going to restrict the IP. I'm going to turn off port forwarding, X11 forwarding. You want everything, all the fancy stuff? Okay, I'm just going to give you 48 hours. That's what I would like to see us going towards. It's a good compromise, in my opinion.
More questions?
Yes, so that's an the question was, is there going to be any kind of automated scheduling features built into the Federation platform? That is an explicit requirement for the Federation platform. It flashed on one of the slides, so I had a very hurry, but yes, there will be a smart scheduler, both available in the workflow and available as a service, which is, okay, please tell me what system should I run on if I'm time to solution or energy to solution or you have some other specific requirements. Usually, probably, please tell me which system is the least used, because that's probably going to get you the quickest answer. The question was that how we manage the scheduling and the staging in of data. This is a layer sitting on top of all the clusters and Slurm and everything. So most likely it would be that, okay, we stage in the data, and when that's done, then you would start scheduling the jobs. If the cost of failure when data is not available is small, then you could try to cheat it out that, okay, data is probably gonna, be available in an hour, and the queue is at least 2 hours, let's take a small risk. But then if you're scheduling half the machine, then you're probably gonna take the conservative approach. So the question is how we ensure that the SSH certificate maps to a local user. How that essentially works is that the platform, when there is a new user, will exchange information with the target side that, hey, there is a user with the following attributes. Please create necessary local accounts and then inform us of the Unix account. At that point in the certificate, that will contain the unique MyAccessID identifier, which the hosting entity would have in their principles mapping that this unique identifier is allowed for this Unix user. And then we know that, so then they are let in.
Short, yeah.
Data transfer. It sounds like you haven't quite picked the technology yet.
For
data transfers.
So, the question was the technology for data transfers. The answer is whatever is available at the sites. So we're not introducing or imposing any additional. We work what's available at the various. Some have IRODs, some have S3, some have just SCP.
All right, we'll wrap it up here. One final thing. We're involved in this as well with Gate University and EASY and all of that. Several of these partners will be hiring. So if you want to work on open source software on the biggest supercomputers in Europe, this could be very interesting for you if you're looking for a new job.
I'm hiring.
Thanks a lot.